He's down.
Wow.
Miocic is getting the belt back.
That was the sound of Daniel Cormier getting knocked out by Stipe Miocic last August in what was supposed to be the final fight of Cormier's career. But at UFC 252 this Saturday, the 41-year-old will fight Miocic once again in an attempt to avenge that loss and go out as UFC heavyweight champion of the world. Today, Ariel Helwani discusses the surreal trajectory of the fighter who has so often finished in second place, and whether Cormier will finally walk away from the sport on top. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, August 13th. This is ESPN Daily. Ariel Helwani, it has been too long since I've heard your voice.
Well, I miss seeing you at the seaport. It was always the highlight of my trip out there.
Ariel Helwani has been covering mixed martial arts since 2006 and is the totally unbiased host of Ariel Helwani's MMA show.
It's nice that we can reconnect here and talk about one of my favorite people in all of sports.
Saturday. Right, Saturday's the big day, the long-awaited and most likely final chapter of the Daniel Cormier-Stipe Miocic trilogy at UFC 252 in Las Vegas. And it's most likely final because Cormier is now 41 years old and he's expected to retire after this fight. And I summon you to discuss one of your favorite people because you not only profiled Cormier for E60 last year, you now host a truly delightful weekly podcast with the man. So how would you describe you guys? Are you friends? Are you colleagues? Something more? What is it?
That is a really tough question, and I appreciate the plug for the podcast, DC and Helwani, which you can catch every Monday. I first met Daniel Cormier via the phone in 2009. I was covering MMA, as I still do. He was about to make his mixed martial arts debut for a promotion back then known as Strikeforce. And he was fighting a guy named Gary Frazier in Oklahoma. And I was going to interview him that day, but my laptop broke. So I ran to the Apple store and was going to get a new laptop, but I couldn't get it in time. So I did the interview from the Apple store, like on the desk that people can, play around with. That was my first meeting with Daniel Cormier. I meet him actually a couple months later in Chicago. He was there to corner his good friend Muhammad Lawal. We were at the media day. We were just kind of talking and whatnot. He goes, "Hey, we're going out for lunch after this. You want to come with us?" And I was, Mr. Big J journalist. I don't hang out with fighters. These are people that we cover. We have to be unbiased. You can't cross lines, all that stuff. And I told him this and I said, no, I can't do that. That would be breaking all the rules. And he said, "You know what?" He goes, "One day we're going to be friends. It's going to be my mission to be friends with you, and you're going to call me your friend." Well, here we are 11 years later. We host this show together. I consider Daniel Cormier a friend, and it feels weird that my friend is fighting for the heavyweight title on Saturday. And 2009 version of me would probably cringe and be very upset that I'm admitting this, but I'm a human being, and these things just happen, I guess.
Ariel, in mixed martial arts, fighters kind of come to the sport from all different athletic backgrounds, but DC's way in was through wrestling, and he was super accomplished collegiately at Oklahoma State University. How would you describe his career at OSU?
I mean, his career at OSU was pretty darn good. I think most people would be very happy with the career that he had at OSU. The problem was he had Cale Sanderson in his way. If you don't know who Cale Sanderson is, Cale Sanderson is the greatest American wrestler of all time, period. And it just so happened that he happened to be in the same weight class as Cale. When we did that E60, Cale had a great quote basically saying that, any other weight class, this man would have been a multiple time national champion. But unfortunately, he was, second place.
Runner-up at 184 pounds from Oklahoma State University, Daniel Cormier.
I got second. My senior year, I got second because I lost to Cale again. I've always come across these guys that have been at the very, very top of the sport, and I just haven't been able to cross that hurdle.
That's a big deal for someone like Daniel, who devoted his entire life to being a national champion, being, you know, the man at OSU. Like, this just meant so much. It was everything for him, and he never got that.
DC faces Cale Sanderson six times in his career at Oklahoma State. He loses every one of the matches. There's this reputation that begins to creep up, as you alluded to, where he's going to be the second best guy. That is Daniel Cormier. So after he graduates, what happens to him?
After he graduates, he decides to focus on the 2004 Olympic Games. And he becomes a dad for the first time. And this is a really big deal. He was very excited. He had a little girl named Kaden.
Kaden was born in March. I remember having real curly hair. And I remember her being like fidgety. I thought it was great that I was at 23 years old, someone's father, and responsible for building a life to try to take care of her.
So Daniel is a new father, and he's super excited. But then something unthinkable occurs. What happened next?
The mother, his girlfriend, Daniel's girlfriend, and her mother's friend were driving on the freeway in Texas, and they were driving in two separate cars.
She decided to put her in the car with her friend because her friend had a newer vehicle. Had air conditioning. It's so hot down there in the summer.
In the middle of the trip, she calls Daniel in a panic, saying that she can't find her friend who was trailing behind her.
She goes, "I don't know, I lost him." And the panic in her voice just scared me so bad.
You could just tell right away from her voice that something had went terribly wrong. He called Highway Patrol, and they notified him that unfortunately there was an accident. And that a semi-truck rear-ended the car, and unfortunately his daughter, Kaden, passed away. She was 3 months old.
Just some guy being irresponsible, not paying attention. The baby strapped in exactly as she's supposed to be. We buried Kaden in Killeen, Texas. I just remember her casket being so, so small. So small.
It's even hard for me to tell the story, let alone talk to him about the story, because, you know, she's 3 months. He's a new father. He's got his whole life with her ahead of them. And he's trying to, you know, be an Olympic athlete and all this stuff. And he has to deal with that. And it totally crushed him. Talking to people who knew him, they said that, you know, he stayed in his house. He didn't want to train. He closed all the blinds. He didn't want to leave. He didn't want to talk to anyone. He was torn up, and as any father would be.
So 3-month-old Kaden Cormier passes away in June 2003. And Daniel, at that point, is, as you say, not the same person by all accounts. In the Olympics that immediately follow in 2004 in Athens, he finishes fourth. And then he begins training for the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing. What happens there?
Man, what happens there is every wrestler's worst nightmare, because he would tell you now that, you know, maybe he was a little too relaxed when it came to the weight cutting.
I'm in Beijing 18 days before the tournament, so I should start managing the weight down. And I said this out loud. As long as I can get on this scale at 211 pounds, it don't matter how I feel.
He left it to having to cut over 20 pounds in the span of a week. And he ended up making the weight in Beijing, but then his body shut down, his kidneys shut down, and he had to be rushed to the hospital.
I started vomiting. Everything was coming up, and then my body just shut down. My legs wouldn't work. I couldn't walk. It was a mess. Once I went to the hospital, it was a wrap. It was over. They said, "You can't compete." It was like, wow, I've really done it to myself this time.
This is something you hear about in MMA with, like, you know, small-time fighters boxing. You may see it in collegiate wrestling. But, like,
yeah,
you get to the Olympic Games, like, this is the best of the best, right? These are the most disciplined athletes who've been training literally for this moment for 4 years. It's not very common. And so for a guy who had been through so much to then deal with that, he would have rather finished in last place, lose all the matches at the Olympics, than, you know, be disqualified because of an issue due to a weight cut. I mean, it's just the ultimate embarrassment. He said he couldn't go back to Oklahoma. Like, he was just so embarrassed because he felt like he let everyone down. And as he puts it, like, at that point, he's at a crossroads. Like, what am I going to do? Go get a desk job now? Like, if Daniel Cormier was a stock, it would be at its all-time lowest.
So take me into Daniel Cormier's mind at this point. You can imagine that stock chart is plummeting. And he returns home from Beijing kind of in this unfathomably embarrassing position. What are his options at this point?
He tells the story that he went to go see his mentor and his coach, John Smith from Oklahoma State. And he kind of talked to him like, hey, you know, I don't really know what to do, but he was a fan of mixed martial arts. And he said, you know, there's an opportunity to go to California and train with a team out there called the American Kickboxing Academy. And I think I'm going to do it.
I don't know if there was much value left in my name after what happened in 2008. I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to go do this MMA thing.
And John says, like, hey, if you got to do it, you got to do it. Like, just go be Daniel Cormier. You're still one of the best in the world. With that blessing, he packed his bags and he went to San Jose, California. No money to his name to go live at, you know, one of his coach's house on the floor and try out this MMA dream.
Coming up, let's talk about Daniel Cormier's rise in MMA and his unhinged rivalry with arguably the greatest pound-for-pound fighter in mixed martial arts, John Jones.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So Ariel, Daniel Cormier is 30 years old when he enters mixed martial arts. I just want to know, is it common for someone that old to decide, hey, I'm going to see how this whole professional MMA thing might go?
No, it's very rare, especially for a guy who, by the way, has no striking background whatsoever, right? Like, it's not like he grew up as a karate fighter or boxer. He literally has to learn how to punch. He has no idea how to box. He has no idea how to kickbox. He has no idea what to do on the ground other than wrestle, which is great, but like, he doesn't know jiu-jitsu or anything like that. So he is pretty much an unmolded piece of clay. He goes there and, you know, the people that I've talked to have said like they could tell right off the bat that there was something there, but he was very out of shape. He was very big and, you know, he was very raw, but you could tell that he was there. I mean, this is a great athlete. Don't let his physique, even if he's out of shape, fool you. This is an incredible athlete here.
So what was Daniel's big break in MMA? Was there a single moment that stands out to you as, oh, this is now a real thing?
In 2011, this promotion, Strikeforce, they start this heavyweight Grand Prix. Daniel was an alternate. So he wasn't in the actual tournament, but he was a part of it in case someone gets injured, pulls out, withdraws, etc. A couple months later, Alistair Overeem, who was the Strikeforce heavyweight champion, leaves the tournament and goes signs with the UFC. So now there's an opening and they put him in there against Bigfoot Silva. Now, Bigfoot Silva is known as Bigfoot Silva because he actually looks like Bigfoot. The man is gigantic. 6'4", 265 pounds, just as like a behemoth, right? And he fights like a behemoth. And when they stare down, everyone is like, oh my God, this is so dumb. Daniel Cormier is 8-0. He's an undefeated prospect. Why are they putting him in there against Bigfoot Silva? This is such a mistake.
Put this kid in there with Bigfoot. Have you lost your mind? That's what people thought.
And what happened?
The jab from Cormier.
Knocked his ass clean out.
Daniel Cormier knocks him out in the first round in such beautiful fashion with a huge punch and then the hammer fist. I'll never forget those hammer fists. He breaks his hand, hammer fisting Bigfoot Silva's big mug. And then all of a sudden people were like, oh my gosh, Daniel Cormier is for real.
It was just like, through the roof. Now you're on your way.
In college, Daniel had Cale Sanderson, arguably the greatest wrestler of all time in his own weight class. When Daniel gets to the UFC, who's the top fighter in his weight class now?
The top fighter is a guy named John Jones, who was the youngest light heavyweight champion and champion, period. DC enters the UFC, by the way, as a heavyweight. He's a big boy. The problem is one of his best friends and training partners, Cain Velasquez, is the heavyweight champion of the UFC. So this is the kind of guy that DC is. He says, all right, I don't want to fight my friend. I'm going to drop down to 205. That's light heavyweight. And then after he wins his second fight at light heavyweight, you know, he gets on the microphone and he basically goes back to his old wrestling days. And he says to John Jones,
John Jones, you can't run away from me forever. I'm the kid at the wrestling tournament that is always in your bracket. No matter where you go, boy, I'm coming.
And that ignites one of the greatest rivalries in the history of the sport.
August 4th, 2014. We are now inside the MGM Grand. It's the lead up to UFC 182. Daniel Cormier and John Jones, and they're about to promote the upcoming fight.
They're literally in the lobby of the MGM. There's old people like checking in right behind them, getting, you know, their gambling vacation started and all this stuff. And here's John Jones and Daniel Cormier, two of the baddest men on the planet. They do this face-off. And by the way, Dana White wasn't there that day. Usually he stands in between the fighters when they do the face-offs. Well, this time Dana wasn't there. The head of PR was there, and he's a little guy. And they go forehead to forehead, and then it's a full-on brawl. An absolute brawl breaks out in the lobby of the MGM Grand. Shoes are thrown, punches are thrown, obscenities are thrown. It's just like a total nightmare for the UFC. And then the best part is they literally book them in a satellite media tour seconds later. Like, they don't give them an hour to calm down. They take them from the brawl into these two separate rooms, and they're asked to do 10 or so interviews where they're doing the split screen bit, and they have to talk to each other.
I wish they would let me next door so I can spit in your face.
You know I would absolutely kill you if you ever did something like that,
you
right?
You could never kill me.
Oh, I bet you I could.
Then you should try, John. You really should try, John.
No, I would literally kill you if you spit in my face.
Yeah, let's try that, John.
Literally kill you.
Let's try that, John.
You could tell right then and there, this was not fake. These two guys truly, truly hate each other.
So you know DC and his family real well. How intense is their camp's dislike of John Jones even today?
They could not hate him anymore. They despise this man. In fact, when I interviewed Daniel's wife, Selena, last year for the E60 piece, she kept referring to John Jones as that guy. And I thought it was weird after a few times. And I was like, wait a second. Do you not like saying his name?
Do you not like saying his name?
I don't. I just think he's such a horrible person.
The fact that Daniel's wife can't even utter his name to me is very telling. You talk to any of his coaches, they despise him. And that's why when everyone keeps talking about the end of Daniel Cormier's career and everyone keeps saying, including myself, oh, you'll come back for that last John Jones fight, they all say, no, we don't want him to do that. We don't care about that fight. We don't care about that feud. John just kind of brings out the worst in him.
Takedown against Cormier in his career.
they fought at UFC 182, and John beat him rather convincingly. And by the way, he did take him down multiple times. Fair play to John Jones. John did not win gracefully. He did the old DX suck it sign to him. He said at the press conference that he hopes that Daniel Cormier is crying somewhere.
I don't like Daniel Cormier. I don't respect Daniel Cormier. I hope he's somewhere crying right now. I'm sure he is.
He did not exemplify a lot of sportsmanship that night, and I think that just made it worse between everyone.
Yeah, doing the DX suck it sign is a declaration of war, I would say.
I agree.
So after that loss, Ariel, all of this mayhem happens, right? John Jones is stripped of the light heavyweight title because he's involved in this hit and run accident. And then DC wins the vacant title as a result. But then in 214, DC loses to John Jones again. But then that fight gets ruled a no contest after Jones tests positive for PEDs. So we wind up in a position where Daniel Cormier has the light heavyweight title, but also on planet Earth, he's 0-2 versus John Jones despite that. So how did DC feel about never actually beating John Jones to get that title?
I think for the longest time it bothered him. You know, this man is the ultimate competitor, and I think he, you know, he saw a little Cale Sanderson in John Jones.
I had to really come to terms with maybe I'm always just going to be the guy that is just right there, but never really could reach the pinnacle. I was always going to have to be the guy that was just second.
When the UFC gave him the light heavyweight title back, after John tested positive, in the buildup to his first fight since that moment against Volkan Ozdemir in 2018, he never held the belt. He would always put it down by his feet. He didn't feel like he had earned that title, and he wanted to win again so that he could earn that title back and feel good about being champion.
So with all the light heavyweight drama going on, DC decides to go back to his roots. And in July 2018, he accepts a fight against the heavyweight champion, Stipe Miocic. At the time, Ariel, what were people saying about DC's chances to win that fight?
Well, he goes into that fight as an underdog. A lot of people thought that he was biting off a little more than he could chew, but he knocks him out. I think it was only once he moved up to heavyweight and finally got to realize his goal of being the heavyweight champion, the baddest man on the planet, I think he finally felt like, okay, I belong. I want something that has nothing to do with John.
I am 39 years old. And I've been second a lot of times. But today, I finally accomplished everything.
So, unfortunately for Daniel in what was supposed to be his send-off fight last August, he loses to Stipe in that rematch and surrenders the heavyweight title. And now, Cormier is 41 years old, and there is a certain existentialism around being an aging fighter. So what do you think is going on in Daniel's mind leading into the fight on Saturday?
You know this by being a sports fan and covering sports. Very rarely do we know going into a match or a fight or a game that this is it, right? Like, we all suspected it was Jordan's last game against the Jazz, but he never kind of outright said it. And John Elway had the same situation in fight sports. We hear from time to time, but like, he has been 100% clear about this. This is it for me. And oh, by the way, I'm fighting for the heavyweight title. This is very unique. This is very strange. It doesn't happen in sports, let alone the fight sports. So there's all these emotions, people who have been, you know, following his journey. There's a lot going into this one. And I think it's a heavy week for a lot of people, but also it's a very exciting week as well.
If you were writing this story and you were not Daniel Cormier or one of his family members or one of his close friends, you might end his story with him losing just to be the guy who always finishes second. And maybe there is some poetry there in the frustration. But what do you make of that eventuality?
I've thought of that. I mean, you can't not, right? I mean, like, if you just look at every stop, it never ends well. Stipe is, in many people's eyes, the greatest UFC heavyweight champion of all time. This is not a cupcake fight. But maybe, you know, in this crazy story of his, the guy who was always second place, the guy who always got the silver medal, the guy who always ended his competition in tears. Maybe he gets to go out as the champion. Wouldn't that be something? After all the stuff this man has been through, it would be nice if Daniel Cormier could end this way.
I'm sure no matter what happens on Saturday, there will be an interesting conversation for you guys on the back end of it. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Pablo. I appreciate it.
Coming up, I embark on an unprecedented investigation into the front row seats inside the NBA bubble.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. Watching the NBA's restart, I, like much of the basketball universe, have been mesmerized by the bubble's virtual fans. Like, who are these people? What's it like to be a virtual Lil Wayne? And most importantly, how can I try it? So I started working my sources and somehow managed to secure a virtual seat at this week's Very Real Pacers Heat game. And because no one man could tackle such a massive journalistic endeavor on his own, I asked a distinguished colleague to help out. Stu Gatz, I've summoned you here because we are currently taping the first podcast ever recorded from virtual seats at an NBA game.
Wow, exciting. Pablo, this is innovative. You're welcome for the idea.
I'm watching ourselves talk to each other as we are sitting. I believe in like section 5, I'm in seat 33. You're like really nearby, sitting diagonally from me. How would you describe what it is that we're inside of right now?
Confusing, dizzying, not knowing whether or not we're on TV ever. Although I'm now starting to get a bunch of texts that Jason Jackson locally gave me a shout out.
Oh, it's the virtual fans. Check them out there. I see you, Stu Gatz. Pablo Torres.
So that means we were on.
It's basically a Zoom room. Mm-hmm. We're in a Zoom room with 30 other people, all of whom are dancing. There's a guy dressed as Darth Vader with a Heat logo on the helmet.
Yes.
There's a guy dressed as a pink bunny who's the in-arena entertainer.
Well, here's a funny story about that. His name is Dale. He's been working for the Heat forever. He also emceed my daughter's bat mitzvah. How about that?
Meanwhile, he had us doing the wave. We were doing a roller coaster. He's a pro.
Oladipo. Oh, he got fouled by Butler, and he made the three. Victor Oladipo off balance, but on target.
I have my cheesesteak next to me. I feel like this is, honestly, I can't decide if it's like super dystopian and sad or like the best.
Right now, I'm thoroughly confused by all of it, and talking to you on a podcast at the same time certainly isn't helping.
TJ Warren from downtown, he rips it. Averaging 35 a game on the restart, top scorer in the bubble. Bam!
Stu Gatz, for the record, just got up out of his virtual seat, disappeared, and is now rematerializing in sort of a phantasm form, limb by limb, unfolding a sign.
Well, because they said at the beginning you can't get signs on, so I figure I'd just try to sneak them in real quick.
Stu Gatz, I think you'll agree with me here. I have never felt more surveilled and less surveilled at the same time. If this is the future, I'm not ready for it.
Olenek put it in. Kelly O cashing in on Miami's 13th offensive rebound tonight. How about 54 paint points for the Heat? They have run away from Indiana in the second half.
The Heat are up 110 to 89. As a self-respecting virtual Heat fan, what do you do next?
I mean, listen, I would have left the game about 7 minutes ago. Should I get up and leave?
For the record, Stugatz actually left. He got up. Everyone in the section is now watching him get up and leave, and he has disappeared.
That's it.
A 22-point victory for Miami. One of their best performances in a long while.
I'm Pablo Torres. I mean, Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.